I was thinking a lot about what would be a nice topic to discuss this evening, and here's how some of my thoughts went. I just came back very recently from a yatra, a visit to South India. Many huge and wonderful temples and long lines to get darshan of the deities from many places, and lots of appreciation for the wonderful work that, or contribution that Ramanujacharya offered to the Vaishnava community of the world, and is continuing so many years after his departure. So I was thinking it might be nice to share something from that. Then I was thinking something else, that visiting South India made me deepen my appreciation for Vrindavan and the wonderful gift that Lord Chaitanya has given of worship of Radha Krishna, and the truths of Radha Krishna worship, and the followers of Lord Chaitanya, Rupa Goswami and the six Goswamis, and has deepened my appreciation for that wonderful gift that we have been given. And then I was thinking, I really would like to go to Vrindavan. So I was thinking then, I would like to share with all of you something about Krishna in Vrindavan, and at the same time, something practical. Maybe it sounds like opposite, Vrindavan and practical. But not at all. Because Krishna's pastimes and his exchanges and loving dealings with his devotees, on the one hand, that's the most practical. That's the essence of our true spiritual identity, our lives, eternal lives. But also, Krishna enacted pastimes that also were very instructive on practical levels. Just before coming to New York and New Jersey area, I was in Houston, Texas. And in Houston, Texas, one of the families, I asked them what would they like to hear, and immediately their son said, "Go for downhill." I thought, wow, if I was 6 years old like this little boy and I had that attraction for "Go for downhill." And his parents say, he knows the whole story. He went after the next, after the next, after the next. And he can go on for like hours of just telling the stories, but his favorite is Govardhan Hill. He really likes Govardhan Hill. So he spoke about Govardhan Hill. His kids' program. But in conjunction with the Govardhan Hill, how old was Krishna when he performed the Govardhan Leela? 7 years old. Do you know the pastime that took place just before Govardhan Leela? Krishna, the morning, the Govardhan Leela was an afternoon Leela. The morning Leela was Krishna satisfied the desires of the wives of the gopis, and he humbled the brahmanas, the husbands of the wives, by showing the super excellent quality of the wives. In fact, in that exchange, Krishna is just 7 years old. He spoke the very same words to the wives of the brahmanas as he said to the gopis who came to enjoy rasa dance. The very same words. "You shouldn't have come here. Your family members won't understand all of this, and you should go back and serve your family members. I cannot repay you for all of your nice service here." And they didn't want to hear that. They didn't want to go back. They wanted to be with Krishna. Just a 7-year-old boy, but these wives of the Brahmanas, they had transcendental love for Krishna. They didn't it wasn't ordinary. And the day just before that was, or at least the Leela that's described just before that, is the Vastrahari Leela. And that's very confidential pastime. I'm just hearing Prabhupada describe that pastime, saying, normally we don't discuss these pastimes. But he said, you're all very serious devotees, so he started discussing the pastime. And I'm not going to discuss the details of the pastime, but there's a particular comment that's relevant to what I do want to speak about. And Krishna was just 7 years old. How old are you?
Less than 2 years.
Huh?
Less than two.
Two? 2 years. Two? The lollipop is good, right? Okay. He was 7 years old, and with him, he wasn't alone, there were younger cowherd boys. There's a particular name that's mentioned in that connection. They're Priyanarma Sakas. That means they were so little, as was Krishna, that they didn't even know what boy-girl stuff was about. Not like in school today, when you're in, I won't do it too much, but I'm hearing from children that are like in first grade and second grade, they're boys and girls are talking about who's going to marry who, and in public school system today, they don't even know what that means, but they're talking about it. Wait to speak with when they know what it means. But this was not modern education and modern society. They were Priyanarma Sakas that watched the whole Leela of Krishna stealing the garments of the gopis and calling them to come and take their garments. And not just covering their bodies, but with their hands above their head, which meant their bodies were exposed, and offering prayers, begging Krishna to give their garments. And Krishna promised them that I know the purpose of your 1 month vrata, Katyayani vrata. You wish to have me as your husband, and I will fulfill your desire. And later Krishna fulfilled that desire in a very unique way. That's not the major part of what I want to speak about either, but during the Brahma Vimohan Leela, when Brahma stole the calves and Krishna went to look for the calves and Brahma stole the cowherd boys, kidnapping, go to jail for stuff like that, and put them in a cave, and he came back and he saw the calves and the cowherd boys having lunch with Krishna. So he went back to the cave, he saw the calves and the cowherd boys in the cave, so he went back and, well, what's going on? During that period of time that Krishna was gone, Brahma was gone, it was just a moment, but 1 moment of Brahma's time meant 1 year of earth time had passed. And in that 1 year of earth time that had passed, Krishna had manifested himself in identical likeness of each of the cowherd boys and each of the calves. And when the cowherd boys went home, the mothers found that their affection for their own son started increasing and increasing to the degree that they have affection for Krishna. And they were bewildered. How is this happening? I have such love for my son, affection for my son, like I have for Krishna. I mean, that's kind of, ordinarily it's the other way around. Mothers have a special affection for their son, and they may have affection for a friend of their son, another boy that comes to their home, but Krishna is the personality of Godhead, and these are pure devotees, not knowing that he's God, but having unalloyed love for Krishna. So their affection for their son, which was Krishna, was growing and growing and growing and growing. And then Krishna spoke to Nanda Maharaj. My dear father, Nanda Baba, by the what the Brahmanas say, it's now a very favorable time for marriages, because in Vedic culture, boys and girls were married at a young age. They didn't live together as husband and wife, but they knew who their husband, they knew who their wife would be, and when they grew up, they would live together as husband and wife. So Krishna made this proposal. This is a very good time. Let's check with Purnamasi and see if she's in favor of having the boys marry. So Nanda said, this is a very good idea. He checked with Purnamasi. Excellent timing. Perfect time. Should be done very quickly. Favorable astrological arrangement. And so all the cowherd boys were married to the various cowherd girls. But they weren't cowherd boys. They were Krishna. Krishna married each and every one of the cowherd girls. They were worshipping Katyayani to have Krishna as their husband. Krishna became their husband. And that Leela of Brahma Vimohan Leela passed, and then the cowherd boys went back home. And so it was Krishna marrying each of the cowherd girls, the gopis. And later he also satisfied their desires in other ways. So at the end of that chapter, which comes just before the Govardhan Leela, Krishna is walking through the forest of Vrindavan in a very hot summer day. Not hot like New Jersey, but hot like Vrindavan, hot summer day. And he was appreciating the trees that were providing nice shade for all the calves and the cowherd boys walking along. So I'm going to read a few of the verses. Krishna is speaking. O Stoka Krishna and Angshu, O Shridam Subal and Arjuna, O Vrishabh, O Jasvi and Devaprastha and Varutapa, just see these greatly fortunate trees whose lives are completely dedicated to the benefit of others, even while tolerating the wind, rain, heat, and snow, they protect us from these elements. Just see how these trees are maintaining every living entity. Their birth is successful. Their behavior is just like that of great personalities. For anyone who asks anything from a tree never goes away disappointed. These trees fulfill one's desires with their leaves, flowers, and fruits, their shade, roots, bark, and wood, and also with their fragrance, sap, ashes, pulp, and shoots. This is the key verse. It is the duty of every living being to perform welfare activities for the benefit of others with his life, wealth, intelligence, and words. One more verse. Thus, moving among the trees whose branches were bent low by their abundance of twigs, fruits, flowers, and leaves, Lord Krishna came to the river Jamuna. So, several instructive messages. I remember hearing a lecture where Srila Prabhupada was describing how we should, it was okay to use the word then, preach Krishna consciousness. Now it's do outreach activity, but preach Krishna consciousness. And he was describing how as our representatives meet the public, they come to our temple, or we go into the public, some function, some festival, or Harinam, or book distribution. We would want to see one of these four things. Ideally, or in the ultimate sense, someone gives their whole life to Krishna. That's one measure of how we can see that the preaching was done very nicely. Or someone gives their wealth to Krishna, or someone gives their intelligence to Krishna. They study the words of Bhagavad Gita, and they worship Krishna's through that sacred conversation and studying. Or they give their words of appreciation. And Prabhupada's point was, at least people should give their words of appreciation. The Hare Krishna people are good. And his point was, if they say differently, Hare Krishna people are bad, then something, we didn't do our preaching so nicely. We should consider, because we want people to take a step toward Krishna. Even the step that says, those Hare Krishna people are so nice. Someone that comes to our temple or our this program, that may be a new experience for them. Ideally, we would want them at least to feel and express from their heart, these people are very nice people. And I'm sure you've heard that testimony from others. The persons come back, they may not understand all of what the temple program is when they come, or etc., the teachings that are being presented, but the individuals that they meet consistently are very nice people. So we can preach, or we can extend Krishna consciousness to others by good qualities. In fact, achar is stronger than prachar. Our conduct and our character and our quality. In fact, that's the first point of education, is development of character. And you look at what Krishna's words are in Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna asks Krishna, what is knowledge and the object of knowledge? Jnanam and Gyanam. And the whole list of items of knowledge, what are they? It's qualities. Starting with amanitvam, adambitvam, humility and pridelessness. How are we going to have, I mean, it's dissonant. It's out of place. If someone has a lot of knowledge and they're really proud, it's very unbecoming. Something's wrong. But it's common, people that are very knowledgeable feel some sense of accomplishment and achievement and superiority even, and pride. Not always, but that happens. And that's not a good sign. It's not a sign, at least from Krishna's indication, it's not a sign of a person who's genuinely situated in knowledge. A person who's genuinely situated in knowledge is very humble. Just like in the Bhagavatam class at the Brooklyn Temple this morning, we were reading from the third canto, and Vidura has asked Maitreya a number of puzzling questions. And he's Vidura, he's very wise. Even before he went on pilgrimage from the royal palace, he was looked to by everybody. Well, almost everybody. Duryodhana didn't look to him as a person of good counsel. But the others, they considered him like that. But here he is asking very, very fundamental questions, and asking, and he's stating that he's bewildered by a number of things. Bewildered by how the living entity, who is qualitatively one with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the super soul is situated within his heart, and he's that proximate, and he has this qualitative oneness, and his state of pure consciousness is not at any time other than pure consciousness by any circumstance, time, or situation, that he becomes bewildered and covered in nescience and suffers. How does it happen? And a number of other related questions. How is the Supreme Lord, who is unchanging, he's not mutable, manifest something, and he's all spiritual, how does he manifest something material? That's a good question. How does something material come from something that's all spiritual? Can you explain? Then he says, if you consider it to be a pastime, then this creation is just a pastime. Then how is the unchanging change into something that's changing as a pastime? Please explain it. I'm puzzled by all of this. And Maitreya, hearing the question, himself becomes apparently puzzled, apparently bewildered for a moment. Although he's a perfectly realized soul, perfectly realized having heard Krishna speaking Uddhava Gita to Uddhava. He was in the audience. He was right there. He heard the whole thing. And in fact, Krishna told him, that which you've heard from me, Vidura is going to be coming very soon. You impart the same knowledge to him. Like, you know, you're empowered. He was taking a humble position. He's exhibiting the quality of one who's factually situated in knowledge. Because, amanitvam, adambitvam. So, here's some practical instruction for us in Krishna's pastimes. We're to develop Vaishnava qualities, where it's not circumstantial. When, you know, we're supposed to be humble, we're humble, and when somebody pushes our button the wrong way, we like forget what humble is and become something else. But not cosmetic, but something that's internal. Genuinely of the quality of a qualified Vaishnava, one who has received this valuable treasure that our disciplic succession is offering to us in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam and the wonderful Bhaktivedanta purports that disclose the meaning of all these things. So if we have those proper qualities, when we're on acting on behalf or as instruments of Srila Prabhupada and his ISKCON movement, the persons who we interact with, it's like our service to manifest the qualities that are found within the text, so that they'll want to read the text. They'll want to know, hey, what's in those books that you people read? Because I like what I see, so I'd like to read something from your books. We're like little portals into the wonderful world of spiritual knowledge and the spiritual world found within Srimad Bhagavatam. At least that. And then we'll go back up. Give our intelligence, give our wealth, give our life, and be instruments to help others come to that position. That's what Krishna is saying about the trees. The trees are likened to spiritually elevated souls because, same as Lord Chaitanya's teaching, our principal means of deliverance for this age of Kali is the chanting of the holy name. And one of the problems in that process is we don't have attraction for it. It's not a problem in the process, it's a problem with our lack of attraction for it. But Lord Chaitanya gives a clue how to awaken our dormant attraction, natural attraction, and become more tolerant than a tree. And that position of tolerance, it's we just render service, as a tree does. The tree is giving and giving and giving and giving and giving and never complains. I'm giving so much, what are you doing for me? None of that, just giving and giving. It's cold out, you want a branch? Here, take one. Break my branch, break my arm. Here's the arm. Etc. in all seasons of the year, shade in the summer, heat in the winter, fruits and flowers, whatever. Just my existence is to be of service to others in whatever capacity I have, and to be free from pride in doing so. This is a little South India connection from our yatra, but one of the dearmost disciples of Ramanujacharya was Kuresh. Those of you that are from Sri Vaishnava backgrounds know who Kuresh is. He was given the name Kuresh because he was the Isha of Kuru, an area not far from where the Vardaraj temple is an area called Kuru, and he was the principal landholder. So he had this name, Kuresh, is the Isha of Kuru. And he had fabulous opulence and great intellectual he had obvious great piety. So one day when the pujari was tending to the deity Lakshmi, there was this creaking sound, and the deity had a practice of speaking to the pujari, so she said to the pujari, "What was that?" And the pujari said, "Oh, that's Kuresh. That's at night time he closes his gate, because in the morning time, as soon as the sun rises, he opens the gate, and anyone that comes from his whole Kuru area, whatever it is that they need, whatever he has the capacity to give them, he gives. And at night when the sun sets, he closes the gate." And every day, that's what he and his wife do. So Lakshmi said, "Can you arrange for him to come? I want to meet this person." You know, like Bhaktisiddhanta's statement, "Don't try to see Krishna, but act in such a way that Krishna will want to see you." Lakshmi wanted to see him. So the pujari went to Kuresh's palace and said, "The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, requested you to come. She wants to meet you." He said, "Why would the goddess of fortune want to meet me? I'm this..." "Because I informed her of your charity. So please come tomorrow." So he went to his wife. Kresha's wife's name was Amal. And he said, "What a horrible situation. This proud personality is honored by people of being a charitable individual, when everything is actually the property of the Supreme Personality, Godhead, and now the Goddess of Fortune wants to come. Let's get rid of all of this so-called opulence. It's just a burden to our life. By the end of the day tomorrow, let us give everything away to all the Vaishnavas and Brahmanas, and we'll save some for Vardaraj, so we'll have some land and it can be maintained, and let's just leave this place and go to Sri Rangam by the end of the day tomorrow." And she was fully supportive. She didn't whine and complain and say, "Wait a minute, what are you doing?" And by the end of the day, he never went to fulfill the request of the Goddess of Fortune. He left, heading for Sri Rangam, with just one cloth for himself and one cloth for his wife. And during that time, the area in between where he was living and Sri Rangam, it was practically jungle. So at night, after the sun had set, that evening they were traveling, and his wife, Andal, expressed she was afraid. Very dangerous in the forest, besides the wild animals, there sometimes are dacoits, and who knows what might happen. So Kuresh said to his wife, "Did you give away everything, or are you still holding on to something?" She said, "I gave away everything. All I have is this golden bowl to serve your meals. That's all I have." And he took it from her and said, "Just see, because of this holding on to this material so-called asset, now you have fear in your heart. What would it be like if we just threw this into the forest and had nothing remaining? Then there was nothing to be afraid of, because who's going to take anything from you? She said, yes, you're right. And with all his might, he threw it into the forest, and they kept walking. And for the rest of their lives, he was before he was king, he was living in a very simple, simple life. For 6 months, he did Madhukari. He was a king. Something very much like Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami, who were prime minister and home minister in the government of Nawab Hussain Shah, went to Vrindavan and became mendicants performing Madhukari. With all humility. Or Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who, when he discovered the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was in the government service, previously the chief magistrate in Puri, going door to door asking people for 1 rupee for the temple of Lord Chaitanya, the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. Every gentleman will give at least 1 rupee. And in that time, it was risking his life. Not the 1 rupee was risking his life, but there were other people who were vested in another place, was the, you know, their bread and butter, their income, their notoriety and their prestige was another place, was the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he was taking great risk, but taking such a humble position, not standing on his position, but taking the humble position of a Vaishnava, serving the Supreme Lord with all humility. So, one other thought I want to share in that connection that's practical. As one, compassion is a natural quality as one makes spiritual progress. Or if you're from Canada, it's progress, I've learned that. Progress, spiritual progress. So, as one advances, how are you to be guided, or how are you to guide yourself in, where do you repose this tendency for compassion? If the tendency for compassion is not properly reposed, it can cause a problem. It can cause spiritual fall down. So as we're progressing, let's do it again slowly, as we're progressing in spiritual life, qualities, natural qualities of the soul awaken, but if we're holding on to a material conception while we're trying to make spiritual progress and quality of compassion is reposed improperly, it can be a cause of fall down. We don't want that. We want continual progress. So we have very nice teachings in Srimad Bhagavatam. She's confirming. That help us understand how to properly repose our tendency for compassion. And very briefly, because it's a long inviting pastime, I invite you all to read it. Those of you that have Srimad Bhagavatam in your home, or Vedabase online, or whatever works for you. Bharat Maharaj, who reposed his tendency for compassion as a great personality on that, not upon the soul specifically, but upon the body, and as a result lost track of his spiritual qualification and spiritual practice even, and fell down from the spiritual platform. And Bharat Maharaj is not an ordinary personality. For one, the whole planet was renamed after him. Prior to Bharat Maharaj, the Earth planet was known in the Vedic literature as Ilavrati Varsha. But Bharat Maharaj was such a great king, the planet got renamed. not like naming a street. You know, John F. Kennedy Boulevard or Martin Luther King Street or something like that. This is the planet. Was renamed after him. Bharat Varsha. And moreover, he was on such an elevated platform of devotional service, he had attained Bhava Bhakti. What that means is the stage just before love of God. And he was in the very serious attempt to awaken, develop fully Prema Bhakti. So just like those of you that read Nectar of Devotion, there's three portions to Nectar Devotion. Sadhana Bhakti, Bhava Bhakti, what's the third one? Prema Bhakti. You're worried about the microphone. You're worried about sitting. Okay. So we're mainly absorbed in trying to do sadhana bhakti nicely. If we do sadhana bhakti nicely, then naturally a spontaneous, not just because we're supposed to chant 16 rounds and follow the regular principles and perform Mangalarti and so forth, but a spontaneous desire to increase our hearing, increase our chanting, increase our absorption in Krishna, out of an awakening of ecstatic mood. Bharat Maharaj was on that stage of bhakti, and he wanted to complete his practice of bhakti. And he was from a great lineage of kings, very, very close to the very early in the stage of the creation, without tracing the lineage of kings, just five kings from Lord Brahma: Swayambhu Vamanu, direct son of Lord Brahma, Uttana Pada following him, is Priyavrata and Priyavrata's son, and his son Nabhi, and his father was an incarnation of the Lord, Rishabhdev, the eldest of 100 brothers, Bharat Maharaj, and if such an elevated person. He was married to a very qualified and beautiful queen. He had five sons, and he, when the sons were of age to care for the kingdom, he left at quite a young age just to go to the forest and absorb himself in undistracted, undivided devotional service. And very quickly, you know the Leela, he was living in a cottage by the side of a sacred river in a sacred place. And there was a torrential downpour of rain and lightning and thunder, and the river by the side of his cottage was swelling, rising and moving very quickly, and the opposite side was a female deer. And she heard the loud roar of a lion. She became very afraid. And in that condition, she slipped and fell into the river, and the river carried her away, and she had a miscarriage that she died. She drowned in the river. And there's this little baby deer, just born, motherless and fatherless and helpless. So here's the king, the protector of his citizens. So naturally, he protected the baby deer and brought the baby deer to his cottage, and when the day broke and the rain had subsided, there he was, the caretaker of a baby deer. And he realized, he expresses in various verses, here I am, the mother of the deer, the father of the deer, the friend of the deer, the caretaker of the deer, the best friend of the deer, I'm everything for the deer. Without me, the deer is helpless. So he began taking care of the deer, like wherever he went, when he went to get water, when he went to gather roots and berries, and when he was doing whatever he was doing, it was deer consciousness. So much so that he diminished and even stopped his devotional practices. Prabhupada comments It was, he made a choice. Because here's this person that gave up the world. I mean, think about it. I just saw some statement that Obama's leaving the White House now to go on tour already to start, you know, campaigning for the next election. And that's like, you know, for the United States. This person was the king of the world. It was already in his hand. He didn't have to go campaigning every 4 years. With the whole kingdom and everything. Qualified wife and on top of the world. But he was so absorbed in his spiritual practice that he left all that behind. In favor of, it was his, he was able to do that because of a very strong yes to devotion to the Supreme Lord. That same capacity, that spiritual capacity, in a conscious way, he turned his back on and stopped his devotional practice and fell down. He fell down to the degree, not only he stopped his devotional practice, but when he thought that the deer was in danger, standing on the edge of a cliff and went to rescue the deer, he fell off the cliff and died thinking of the deer and became a deer. This bhava bhakti personality. So I remember as a young devotee having many discussions about, is it possible to fall from the platform of bhava bhakti? At what point can you not fall? And you know, then the next one, if someone in bhava bhakti can fall, then what about me? Like little puny, scrawny, skinny me. Little nothing. Like kind of like, you know, toss in the towel now before it gets tough. But it should teach us an important lesson. The important lesson is, in detail, it's described in the purports of that section of the Bhagavatam, but our compassion towards others should go to the soul. When you're advancing in your spiritual life, naturally a tendency for compassion will awaken. I mean, it's not to say it wasn't there before you started, but it just becomes stronger, becomes more pronounced. Now, how do you direct that? That direction should be, ideally, towards the soul. Now, there may be some corollary things that you do to help the soul, like the soul may be entangled in some circumstance of life. But the purpose of unentangling the soul from that circumstance of life is to allow the soul to become closer to Krishna. That's the goal. That's how we exhibit compassion unto others. And if we lose that focus and just think of the externals, something material, we know the drowning man saving his coat example. But it's not only the other person doesn't get the same benefit, we may also fall down. It's not like, hey, watch out. It's, you know, like scare tactic. It's real. Up to bhava bhakti one can fall. So make that nice comparison of the tree that's like a sage or a spiritually elevated soul that simply thinks of service unto others. Simply, that selfless service slogan that people like means on the platform of the soul. And how to do that, practically speaking, when a lot of people are in unfortunate circumstances of life. Like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was asked, why don't you spend more time and more of your resources in helping the poor? So, very directly and bluntly, Bhaktisiddhanta would say, in this material world, everyone is poor. Okay. Someone may have this kind of asset and not have that kind of asset, but as far as what the real asset of life is concerned, everyone is poor. Everyone is a candidate. And those that have some worldly assets, they can help those that are without worldly asset, but all are without, if but that's only going to be possible if they're spiritually rescued. Or another way of saying the same thing, and I'll end with this, it's like adjusting a problem. This also comes from the example of Maitreya speaking to Vidura. Vidura's asked questions to Maitreya. There's a light, here's my hand, there's a shadow on the wall. So if I have a problem with the configuration of the shadow on the wall, I can try to adjust the configuration of the shadow on the wall, or I can move my hand, because that's what's casting the shadow. What's the root, similarly, of the material problems? The root of material problems is a spiritual problem. And if you just try to adjust the material problems, you're not going to get to the root of what the problem is. You'll have an endless, literally endless series of adjustments that never really take care of the problem without the spiritual contact, without the spiritual attention. With that spiritual attention, the shadow also becomes that it follows from spiritual well-being, material well-being follows like a shadow. So when we're contemplating making a little bit of spiritual progress, how to this desire to be of some assistance to others awakens and becomes stronger. The teaching of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna in Vrindavan, is teaching like this. We may certainly do things that are of benefit to others on the physical plane, but our consciousness should be in a very direct and purposeful and undivided manner thinking of the welfare of the soul. Specifically bringing the soul in closer contact with Krishna, the Supreme Soul. Awakening Krishna consciousness through the charitable act, the interaction that we may have with another. Somehow may that happen. And that can happen not only in acts of charity that we do, but our lives, our interaction with others in the home, in interaction with others in the workplace, or in the marketplace, or in the world in general. Somehow, Krishna, please engage me as an instrument of bringing this soul or these souls, if you so desire, closer to you, or again situated in their Krishna consciousness. We may not have a clear idea how to do that, but if that desire is there, Krishna will help you. And in the course of the unfolding of your life, more Krishna will give that intelligence, how to do those things for him. And be his instrument directly in the message of Krishna consciousness coming into the lives of those who we interact with. And collectively, there's a lot of people here. We all did that. Wow. We'd have a better world. Okay. So, Vrindavan, Dham Ki
Jai.
And Srila Prabhupada Ki
Jai.
Any discussion or comments, anyone? Yes.
Maharaj, you were telling about Bharat Maharaj. What should have he used to do, he would have done instead of doing that? So can you explain a little bit? So the way he did to the deer was incorrect. You said that our goal should be the person we have to connect to the towards Krishna. We have to see his soul's desire. So,
great question. I got your question.
Okay.
Great question. You have children?
Yeah, I have.
Okay. You have a child. Apply the same question to your child. Your mother, here's a child, a dependent. As Bharat was taking the deer, is now a dependent. How do I serve this spirit soul that's in little child's body? Because it's not just a little child. This is a spirit soul in a package that I've been entrusted to look after. So two things with Prabhupada comments specifically that with the deer, to rescue the soul was a very difficult thing because souls are generally rescued through sound vibration, and deers are not accustomed to, we're not accustomed to having deers understand spiritual knowledge. But sound vibration nonetheless, just like kirtan or japa or sound, spiritual sound vibration is beneficial in any case, even for a plant or an insect or whatever. But not necessarily placing the same amount of attention on rescuing the soul of a plant or the soul of an insect, because the human form of life has a greater capacity. So your child will have a greater... So place attention where there's a greater capacity to spiritually develop. But while doing so, even with the deer, so the deer is helpless until a certain stage, being mindful of this is a service I'm doing to help another being, but never for a moment forgetful of the ultimate purpose of whatever my life is and what service is meant to do. He let go of that. That was the mistake. So don't let go of that is the right. And perform, this is another dimension, but perform the duty, but without attachment to the deer, or for that matter, all of our other duties of life. Be attached to the spiritual conception and the service to the soul, be attached to that, not the identification of that I'm the mother, this is my son, this is my child, I'm the protector. But there is a protector, and we're ultimately the servant of that protector. The real protection is the spiritual well-being. So stay fixed in that consciousness. So to administer spiritual well-being to a deer is tough compared to a child. But the principle is similar. Someone else? Yes?
Maharaj, you mentioned the story about the king who gave away everything and went to
Kurish, yeah.
Can you tell us something more about the story, or is there, where could I read about the story?
Where can you read about that story? Almost all the biographies of, well, I should say, many of the biographies of Ramanujacharya contain that narration. That's where I received it. And I found it in several of them, so I, you know, accepted as a, it was, and the narration was rather consistent. So, that's, there are lots of books on the life of Ramanujacharya, and he was one of them, one of the two primary ones that are consistently mentioned, along with Govinda, his cousin. Someone else? Yes?
You specified like Bharat Maharaj was in Bhava Bhakti, right? So that means it's a complete realization that he's a spirit soul. That means he has realized the highest happiness. How come, you know, one with that highest level of happiness, how come we can, you know, again entangled into something that is not?
Another very good question. It's amazing. But the short answer, by reference to Madhurya Kandambani by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he discusses this. There are degrees of eradication of anarthas. And I can't remember exactly which of them, but the anarthas that arise from nam aparad in bhava bhakti, they're almost completely. Many of the others are completely, but almost completely. That means some residual trace. So the possibility is there, because if there's some residual trace of anartha, then the possibility is there to make a wrong. So it was a free will choice, and he made the wrong free will choice. in the free will choice is always there, even in prema bhakti, but one doesn't misuse it. Like Prabhupada's teaching is, when we return to the spiritual world, it's not that we lose our free will. Our free will is still there because we're marginal, living at least part and parcel of the Supreme, who has unlimited free will. So free will is still operative. But we will not misuse our free will. In that condition, Bharat Maharaj misused his free will, because there was a trace of that anartha, and thus he misused his free will. But the Supreme Lord was very kind and allowed him, or restored his full memory while he was the deer, of his previous life as Bharat Maharaj in the stage of Bhava Bhakti. So he went back to the very same place, that same ashram, where there were sages, and he just hung out with the sages, hearing, taking the remnants of their food, and waiting for his life to pass as a deer. And in his next life, he was awarded a human form of life in a qualified Brahmana's family. That's also, I mean, two very unusual things, because of his elevated condition as Bharat Maharaj. So he didn't lose it. He got a different body, and he was restricted, but at the same time benedicted for all the spiritual practice he had done as Bharat Maharaj, and completed his life in the next, completed his spiritual practice. Yes.
So much for giving this analysis of example of a tree, how tolerant and selfless service is to, you know, the living entities, and how we can, you know, just devotees of Vaishnava movement, from our behavior, from our service, we can serve our guests and others so that they can feel connected to Krishna consciousness, and somehow or other they're connected.
You got the message.
My question was, Maharaj, in spite of so many years, we don't have the feeling of, unless we don't understand others' pain, how can we shower compassion? And in what stage one actually develops that kind of feeling? Because living in such a demanding world, we're always busy in our personal life. How can I take care of me or my spiritual life? But it's very hard to understand others' pain and try to think for, sacrifice anything for others, you know, in difficult situations also. As a devotee, you know, we don't really, especially in my case, we don't get time or, you know, neither as much desire to understand how other devotees are doing. So how, in what stage, one develops such kind of desire in heart to think of others?
Well, you said many things. Try to unpack some of the many things, at least a few of the many things. One of the things was understanding the pain of others. That's a statement that Narada makes about Nalakuvera and Manigriva. But that was specific to pride, and his contemplation was their pride needs to be removed, and the best way for their pride to be removed is they're deprived of their opulence. And he gives the example, one who's pricked by a pin, or by a thorn, understands when others are being pricked by thorns that they're undergoing pain, because he's had that pain. And in their case, because their hearts were filled with pride, they needed to have the thorn prick. However, it's not that one has to one has to become an alcoholic in order to understand that an alcoholic is suffering. We should all become alcoholics first, so then we can, you know, it's not, one needs to be covered by ignorance in order to understand that ignorance is suffering. But rather, your question leads to the by spiritual elevation, we can understand, and by training and spiritual elevation, we can understand there's suffering. I've been hearing Prabhupada speaking on Nunam Pramatak Kuru Te Vikarma Yidindriya Prithai Apranoti, and describing, you know, the misfortune of the hogs. And you tell a hog, eating stool is nasty. And they don't get it, because they're in the body of a hog. And you see, when the hog sees a nice, fresh batch of stool, their tail is wiggling. They're like, whoa. So you can't instruct the hog, this is nasty. But we, you know, we don't have to go eat stool to actually understand it's nasty. By compassion, by spiritual awakening, we can understand it's a very unfortunate circumstance. What we can do about the hog being attracted to stool is very little, but a human being, there's something we can do, and it's empathy, it's understanding the suffering of another, not because necessarily I've undergone the same as suffering, although that's certainly one way. But by spiritual awakening, one can have those eyes to see. One can see through the eyes of scripture, Jnana Chakshusha. One can see as Krishna sees, through scripture, through purification from training and spiritual awakening. So that would be my advice. Find a nice teacher. Chant nice rounds. And your empathy capacity will grow just by spiritual awakening and spiritual training. Is that all right? Yes.
Maharaj, I was asking in regards to Bharat Maharaj coming to the stage of Bhavabhakti and then falling down and again continuing. That establishes that, you know, that wherever we live the spiritual development, we carry on next life from that picture. But when we go to the spiritual,
at least
home,
the opportunity is there.
Right.
You may not carry on in your next life. It may be many lifetimes before you carry on, but that's never lost.
Right. But when you go back, ultimately when you go back home, back to Godhead, and Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita several places. But is there a guarantee that you will not, that you talked about the free will, people
okay.
taking advantage of the free will?
The answer is yes. And the guarantee is Krishna's word.
But then how we all are...
Do you really want to go there?
Yeah, I know. It's big.
Really want to go there? Trying to recall what section of the when I was in Houston just before coming here, there was a Bhagavatam section where it was Puna Smritihi. One again remembers, and it was, you know, Vishvaksena Punas Smritihi, one again remembers the personality of Godhead, indicating there was remembrance and forgetfulness and then again remembrance. It's a discussion. I'd rather not go down that road if you don't mind. To understand events that are anadi is beyond the capacity of the limited mind to understand. But it's an event that the living entity misuses as free will. And how you understand that with the limited mind, where we only understand past, present, and future, that says, once upon a time. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, don't ask the misleading question, when the living entity was created, or when the living entity was enthralled. So it's like, once upon a time, Krishna's in the spiritual world alone saying, I think it's time to have some living entities. And boop, there's some living entities. So it's not an event in time like that. But it's an event. The living entities, they're co-eternal with Krishna, but they're emanating from Krishna. And the living entity's enthrallment, likewise, Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, it's a misleading question, because we think of it in terms of the time that we're used to. Once upon a time, and then some time passed, and here we are. So, it looked like an event in time, but it's not an event in time, but it's an event. That's an anadi event. You know, what's an anadi event? You know, we don't. Our mind does not have the capacity to wrap around that one. Rather, Prabhupada recommends that we try to get out. And once we're out, we can understand in that liberated position the answer to your question. Let's work on that one. That's a really important one. Okay, yeah. Hi, Krishna.
Sometimes devotees will consult an astrologer to find out what time period may be most suitable for this kind of activity or that, what phase of their lives they might be anticipating at a particular time.
Okay.
And I'm wondering, how much are we to understand that what happens to us once we've surrendered to Krishna is coming directly from Krishna, and how much of what we're going through is coming from karmic activity that you can see happening in your astrological chart? Or is it one and the same?
Are you okay with the answer proportionate to?
Of course.
So that's the answer.
Okay. Proportionate to.
And there's a corollary factor that says don't plug in again to forgetfulness of Krishna. Because if you plug in again to forgetfulness of Krishna, then it's no longer proportionate to, it's back into the, you know, the influence. And practically speaking, we're in the anishtata bhakti stage, unsteady. So sometimes on, sometimes off. Or not even exactly like a rocker arm switch where it's on and off. It's like a variable switch where never like completely on or completely off. It's variable. And so we're plugging into some degree and unplugging to some degree. But the principle is, all that reaction by surrender is not just diminished but eliminated. Another way of answering your question is it's the proportionate kind of an answer or response. One of Lord Chaitanya's devotees named Jagatananda Pandit has this statement in Prema Vivarta that I like very much. I have it on my wall by my desk. It says, it is ill-advised to try to cross a river with one foot in two different boats. And similarly, when one is trying to make spiritual progress, put both feet in the spiritual boat to cross the river of material existence. And then one has a safe journey. So that's the proportionate thing. Our common is the tendency to vacillate, anishtata, Sometimes it's dimmer switch. We'll be with our hands on the dial. Yeah.
But the two, the astrological predictions as well as Krishna's direct intervention could coincide?
Here's a statement. This isn't a direct answer to your, yes, they could coincide, but here's a direct answer to your question. One devotee to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada, should we consult astrologers when we're making important decisions? Prabhupada's answer. If you know it's going to rain, you might take an umbrella. And the devotee that asked the question thought that maybe Prabhupada didn't understand the question, so he waited until later in the conversation. He asked the question again. He got the same answer. If you know it's going to rain, you know what the forecast is, you know the astrological influences, you might not also. But you, at least you know it might rain, so you might take this precaution or that precaution, but you're going to go about your duty, because that's what's the essence, not whether it's going to rain or not. Taking into consideration. But take shelter of Krishna and your performance of duty unto Krishna. Be wisely advised. Anyone else? Okay. Last question.
Isn't the cowherd boys were kidnapped by Brahma and they were there for a year. So when they finally got back, so what happened? Were there any confusion of what happened during the past year, or you didn't know about this?
Oh, Brahma wasn't absorbed in what happened during that time that he was gone. Brahma was absorbed in his experience.
No, I was talking about the cowherd boys when they went back to their families.
They were under the influence of Yogamaya, or the internal potency of Krishna, such that they didn't even recognize. And their mothers didn't even recognize. Krishna knew, but they were not recognizing that anything other than, you know, like Krishna came back and said, you know, Krishna, you're such a worrier. Just sit down and have your lunch. Let's finish our lunch. Like nothing happened. By the influence of Yogamaya. So that Krishna could perform this wonderful pastime with multiple things going on at the same time. Curbing the pride of Brahma, allowing the gopis to have their desire fulfilled, allowing the mothers to have their desire, they wish I had Krishna as my son, so they got Krishna as their son. The cows had Krishna as their calf. That's also described. They had such love. They were just like, ooh, they love Krishna. They love Krishna. And they wanted Krishna as their calf. So they got Krishna as their calf. The description is the cows were grazing on the side of Govardhan Hill. And the cowherd men were up on top of Govardhan Hill. And when the cows saw the calves at the bottom of Govardhan Hill, they went running. You ever seen a cow run? Cows generally don't run, but when they move, they move. Boom, boom. So they were running down the hill, and the cowherd men were running down with their sticks and stop, because you know the calves would drink all the milk. Stop. But by the time the calves were with the cows are with their calves, and the cowherd boys with the calves and Krishna, all of their concern just melted out of affection for Krishna in the form of the cowherd boys who were their sons, and they embraced their sons. They forgot everything. Because it's just a loving exchange. Krishna is making this arrangement for loving exchange, and then it's back to normal. hey, Krishna, you're so attached to us, you can't be away for even a moment. Come sit down and have your lunch. Like ordering it. Scolding it. Power boy. Affection. Intimacy. That's Krishna in Vrindavan. Okay.
When Krishna got married to the gopis, he was 7 years old, you said.
Yeah.
So why did the gopis marry Krishna when he was so small?
The system in India, even during Prabhupada's time, you know, describing how young his sister was when she was married and so on, that was the system. The girls were married very young. The boys were a little older. The girls were very young. They're married. And what does that mean? It means on their birthday they bring a cake or something to their husband. And he says, he eats the cake and says, oh, she's a good cook. I like her. You know, kiss. She's my wife. You know, what does that mean to a little boy? Because the 364 other days she's in her home with her mother and father. But they're married. And then when they grow up and they have an understanding of what that is, they have a husband and they have a wife. They don't have to go through all that silly business. You know what I mean?
So gopis, they're also young at that time, 7
Yeah, they were younger. So this is this worshipping Katyayani. They wanted Krishna as their husband.
And then later they forgot about their marriage or they continued with it?
They understood. Now the cowherd boys were the original cowherd boys. So now they had a husband. And Yogamaya had the whole scenario so that the girls thought they were married to this boy and the boy thought they were married to this girl. You know, they weren't there for the wedding. They were married to the girl. Because they, you know, they, she brought the cake every year. This is your wife. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Vrindavanam ki jai. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki
jai.
Prabhupada Swami Maharaj ki jai.